Hot take alert on this Thursday, February 9th. Who's ready for this hot take?
I'm not prepared.
Really?
I'm not ready.
Fire retardant.
Okay, I'm ready.
I will say I've had plenty of time to get ready for this morning, Adam.
Okay, here
waiting,
we go.
Been waiting about 30 minutes.
I think that the Team USA World Baseball Classic pitching staff would barely even be considered a good fantasy baseball pitching staff. And it's sort of how I would construct a fantasy baseball pitching staff. But I am so disappointed in Team USA. There's got to be at least 15 starting pitchers, Americans, that are not on this team.
You know what?
Yeah, but that offense, though.
Would be disappointed if my favorite team allowed their starting pitchers to go play in this.
Yeah, no, is true.
It's terrible.
You're terrible.
It's awful.
You're exaggerating a little, but I'm happy. I was happy that very few Yankees are playing in the World Baseball Classic.
No way. Like, you let the hitters play. That's fine. Whatever. No catchers, no pitchers.
So how would you even, play?
Each country can bring their own pitchers and catchers from non-major league teams.
But I did notice that...
Because Japan and Korea, major advantage.
That's a terrible idea, by the way. But I did notice that the Team USA pitching staff is sort of like... It's got like different tiers of starting pitchers. Like Chris Archer, you'd get... would be your ace. Then Danny Duffy, Michael Fulmer, Sonny Gray. Let's see. Tanner Roark, Drew Smiley for some late round upside. Marcus Stroman. So the only thing, like, if you could replace Archer with, Bumgarner, then this would be a pretty solid fantasy squad.
If it's a two-catcher league and you've got LaCroix and Posey, that's pretty good.
that is pretty good. Absolutely. Oh, gosh. You get Arenado and Goldschmidt. We got a couple of first-round picks there.
This was definitely an auction league. They spent all their money on hitters. Had to go cheap on the pitchers.
No Trout, though. No Trout. No Harper. Is Harper on the team? No. No Trout, no Harper. It's disappointing.
Disappointing. Where is their national pride?
Hey, Trout and Harper got drafted yesterday on our head-to-head categories mock draft. Yes, head-to-head categories. We are, I don't know, like last couple of years putting more emphasis on this. It's become a more and more popular format. It's my favorite format. Is it anybody else's? It's the best?
My favorite format.
It's the best format.
It's my least favorite.
It's everybody's favorite format except for Scott.
Scott's a purist.
And it will be the format, once again, of the Podcast Rejects League.
Yes, which will apparently be happening. Thank you for mentioning that. Now we're going to get a lot of submissions. We are not ready for your submissions yet. Please do not try to enter the podcast league.
Send them on Twitter.
The earlier you get them to Adam, if you can actually telegram them to his home.
Our first contest is going to be...
Find where I live and knock on my door.
Send Adam a Valentine.
Just send pizzas to
Adam. Adam needs Valentines on Twitter.
Adam loves pineapple and ham pizza.
I would not mind that. Can I tell you guys?
Oh, come on.
That's the worst pizza.
Actually,
you guys don't like Hawaii pizza?
Oh, this is, we have to move on.
All right, we have to move on.
Podcast apart.
We have to move on.
I mean, all pizza's good, right?
No.
Hawaiian pizza's not.
Hawaiian pizza's very good. Scott.
I'm so disappointed Heath and I are on the same side of this.
This is Scam. Scott and Adam, team it up. Scam loves Hawaiian pizza. Okay. So we have a lot to talk about today. We're going to talk about that head-to-head categories mock draft, which was one catcher, three outfielders. It was the points league, roster construction. Five starting pitchers, two relievers, except no need for Sparps in this format. So Danny Duffy's just going to be a starting pitcher, not a reliever, because saves is a category. It's not a points league. So we're also going to talk about age. I want to know, how old is too old? Does age really matter? Do left-handed hitters that can't hit left-handed pitching really need to be downgraded? Those types of things. Plus, we have some news and notes. Chris Carter, Mike Napoli, Homer Bailey, extra innings rules, and your emails at fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. First, let's go around the room. Give me one way in which your head-to-head category strategy was different than your points league or roto league strategy. What was different in your approach to yesterday's draft, head-to-head categories? Chris Towers, best format ever, go.
I think it probably makes true relief pitchers a little more valuable than they would be in a typical head-to-head format. because you do need saves like we talked about, unless you want to punt them. It is actually easier to punt, I think, in a head-to-head categories league.
Yeah, you can win each week.
Yeah, you can win each week, but you're still kind of putting yourself at a disadvantage. But if you aren't punting saves, it's easier to reach, I think, for those closers because you do need saves. So that's one that I noticed.
Okay, and it's easier to punt in this format. Not something that we typically do, but it's easier to punt in a head-to-head categories league than it is in a standard roto league. Like, you don't want to get the 1 point in a category.
It is, I guess, it also depends on whether you're scoring it as, do you get 5 points for a win or 1 point for a win?
Well, like,
you get 1 point for a win.
You get a win for every category, you mean, or a win just for...
Yeah, I think you should get a win for the week. I understand there are some opinions.
Oh, gosh, no. You get a win for every category you win. You win 9 out of 10, you go 9-1.
Yep.
Yeah, I think that's stupid. But that makes it harder to punt.
It does, yeah. Okay. Scott White, what was different for you in this draft compared to others?
Well, yeah, I tried to be very intentional about changing things up for this format after kind of winging it last year in the Podcast Rejects League, and that was just a complete disaster. That was
best draft
far,
ever.
Far and away my worst performance in any league last year. And what I learned from that experience was that, well, for the most part, you can evaluate players in this format similarly to Roto because it's still 5x5. You're working with much fewer lineup spots than Roto. So to get that balance of the hitting categories, you can't rely on having more roster spots to make up for a weakness somewhere else. So I went very hitter heavy in this, and I specifically targeted hitters who really excelled in at least one thing and preferably two. So those across the board types, like for instance, I picked Jonathan VR ahead of both Xander Bogaerts and Francisco Lindor because I was worried neither of those two would give me quite enough in home runs or stolen bases to really be worth the price I'd be paying for them, when VR is obviously, even if you think he's going to regress, he's still going to be a steals stud. So that was one kind of.
That is really.
I think that's almost
that
overthinking
really
it a little bit, going VR over those two shortstops.
That was one of the notes I took. I'm sorry. That was one of the notes. I was looking at the draft results, and that was one of the things I jotted down. Scott took Jonathan VR, and the next two picks were Lindor and Bogaerts. So it was a shortstop run, and you took VR.
To sum it up, I set a very high threshold for hitters, and there are just a select few hitters that could meet it, which is why I went so hitter heavy in the early rounds.
And I would actually say, in general, you can avoid rate stats a little more, because rate stats are going to fluctuate so much from week to week.
Yeah.
That even if you're really good in batting average or really good in ERA,
yeah,
you're going to have 10 weeks out of the season where you just suck in those categories anyway.
And I think that's especially true for pitchers, which is another reason why I thought it was okay to go hitter heavy.
Yeah, you and I kind of followed.
Starting pitchers are only making one or two starts a week, and they're just the timing of when their good starts are going to be versus their bad starts is going to be pretty arbitrary.
Hmm. All right, that's pretty interesting. I'm not saying you're wrong. I do wonder, though, if, like Heath said, are you overthinking it? I don't think that this format requires you to get away from just drafting the best all-around player, you know.
That's fine.
If more than anything, that was my takeaway, was I wanted to go more best player available than I normally do, because I don't think positional scarcity matters near as much because we're playing with head-to-head rosters in the roto format.
Right,
and I just tried to
enough.
Like, I love, and I kind of went the same way Scott did. I didn't take it to the same extreme with hitters. I think he took two bench hitters before he took his second starting pitcher. I almost filled up my lineup, and then I filled out my rotation with what I thought were high upside pitchers that have plenty of risk, but it's not too difficult to stream in this format.
That's
either.
You should be able to find streaming options, in a 5 starting pitcher format.
Yeah, you should. I did this format last year and had trouble finding, not in our podcast categories league, because that was a 14 team league, but I did a 12 team. Head-to-head categories league, and it's just the pitcher landscape was so much worse than everybody anticipated last year that streaming was a little bit harder for me.
I feel like we've had this discussion before. It was worse for everybody.
It was worse, but streaming was harder for everyone.
I think it's usually easier in this format because a lot of times in this format you just have the 7 pitcher spots and not must 5 starting pitchers and 5 relief pitchers. And when you have the 7 pitcher spots, there's going to be at least one team that's going to go 4 or 5 relievers and try to just win it that way.
Usually. Yeah. We did the default settings for a head-to-head categories league on CBS Sports. I don't know what you're talking about, usually.
But yeah, that is true, though. And on other websites, you know,
a majority of all other websites are that way.
Well, okay, we'll get back to this draft because it was pretty interesting, and I do also want to spend more time talking about, you know, do you just take best player available? Do you focus on categories? Scott specifically picking VR over those two guys, Bogarts and Lindor. But I wanted to say that one of the big changes for me is a guy like Billy Hamilton, the one category specialist. I think they're less valuable in this format, and Hamilton went with the first pick of the 9th round. That is not going to happen in a 5 outfielder roto league. But with fewer hitters to compensate for Hamilton's weaknesses, the value of his steals, you might win steals just about every week with Hamilton, but he could really crush you in, if he has a typical Billy Hamilton year, he could really crush you in every other category. So, you know, you have to be careful with guys like that when there are fewer hitters to balance out his deficiencies. This one category specialist can really hurt you. So I know that was
different. I agree with that. That's kind of along the same lines as what I was doing, but it's.
But then why take VR?
It's a second point.
That's like, what if VR just gets you steals this year and has a bad year offensively?
He's a pretty good power hitter too. I think like him versus Lindor, the home run total will be similar. Maybe not Bogarts. Maybe Bogarts will beat them both, but Bogarts not going to count on him for steals at all, obviously.
Okay. I have a lot to say about this. I look forward to it.
Yeah. We're expecting Lindor and Bogarts to both beat VR in 3 out of 5 categories. Possibly 4.
He's going
to win steals, but other than that, you don't really have a great expectation for VR beating those two in any other category.
I think the power production for him and Lindor's specifically the home run production for him and Lindor is similar. I don't think there's too much difference.
Right, so he might win home runs too, which would be 2 out of 5 he gets over Lindor. He's probably losing 4 of 5 to Bogarts.
Losing batting average. I don't know about RBI and runs. But I mean steals. Like, he's not just beating them in steals. He's tripling them.
And I think batting average in this category, in this format, is kind of pointless to chase.
Yeah, I know what you're saying on a week-to-week basis, but you're still over the long haul.
Sure.
Let's say there's 26 weeks. It could be the difference between going, 19-7 or 7-19?
That's fine, but if you think Jonathan VR is going to be significantly better than Bogarts in stolen bases,
that's it.
Maybe home runs.
I think you're hoping that they're the same in home runs.
Well, I took 2 bench hitters before I took my second pitcher.
Right.
And they're part of the reason for that was VR insurance. I protecting myself from the complete bust scenario, I took Jose Peraza for my bench, who would definitely not provide much power, but he should give me what I expect from VR in terms of stolen bases. And if I have to plug him in instead, it's not like the whole delicate balance falls apart if VR ends up being a bust, because Peraza could be something similar.
But you're compounding the choice to take a lesser player in the 3rd or 4th round by also making your pitching staff later by having to take Peraza over a better pitcher in the later rounds. You're making yourself worse in 2 places now.
Well, I just want to be really good in stolen bases. I don't know what to tell you. I hardly ever won home runs or stolen bases when we did this last year, because I took too many vanilla type hitters. And I feel like Bogarts and Lindor, while they have their formats, I mean, Lindor, especially in points leagues, I think is great, but in this, I would describe them both as pretty vanilla.
I don't know. Because my team is made up of a lot of, you remember we had that email, I think it was yesterday or two, our last show, about the guy who drafted a bunch of players who we thought were going to get him about 20 steals, and it was like Rendon, McCutcheon, or Machado, none of them came through. And his steals were terrible because of it. But he won the league because those players were good. That's kind of my team, right? I've got Goldschmidt, who stole 32 bases last year, and you never know with him.
We all expect that to fall, yeah.
Yeah. Kinsler could steal 20, could steal 10, wouldn't surprise me. I have Bregman, Swanson, I don't know what to expect from steals with those guys. I have Desmond, I have Brantley, I have Fowler, I have a whole bunch of guys who could steal 20 bases, or they could steal 10, it wouldn't surprise me. But I couldn't just pass up good players for steals. Even in this format, I'm not willing to make it about the categories and not about the players.
Well, first of all, it's not like I don't have good players.
I know, but you rank those two shortstops ahead of VR.
Yeah. Yeah. They all typically go in the fourth round. I just decided to prioritize VR and his extreme steals upside over those other two in this format because I feel like hitter upside is necessary.
Okay. Okay. Cool. All good. Yeah, anyway, let's move on. Stat of the day. So Scott and I, Scam, we cite this writer a lot, David Schoenfield of ESPN.com, and he had a story about the two ERA champs from last year, and that would be Kyle Hendricks, who had a 2.13 ERA, and Aaron Sanchez in the American League, who had a 3 ERA. 8 National League starting pitchers had better ERAs than Aaron Sanchez.
And that's actually pretty typical.
Felt like a lot, but
over the last 4 years, the NL ERA leader has been about a half a run to three quarters of a run better.
Yeah, but I mean, look at the last four ERA champs. Anibal in the American League, Anibal Sanchez, Chris Sale, David Price. They had a 2.57, 2.17, and 2.45 ERA. Last year, Aaron Sanchez had a 3 ERA. I think it's pretty high for an ERA champ. But the stat was from Schoenfield. The average. So he looked at the last 50 ERA champions, only 6 had a lower ERA the following year, and most of them were like Hall of Famers, Maddox, Randy Johnson, Kershaw, Pedro Martinez. The average ERA increase for the National League pitchers was 0.51, and the American League ERA champs averaged a 1.08 ERA increase. So I don't know. That's crazy.
That makes perfect sense because if you win an ERA title and you're not Clayton Kershaw, then you probably just had a career year.
Yeah. But
I mean, you look at that list of guys that have done it, and most of them were having their best.
You could actually probably do this with the leader in any category. Your batting champ probably, I would guess, drops 20 to 30 points on average every year.
That's surprising that it's that high.
A full run.
I mean, obviously regression is to be expected when somebody has a career season, but the average of 50 pitchers.
Yeah.
The increase was 108.
And for the American League.
That's like dropping, that's like dropping a guy from top 20 to like top 80? That's a big drop in like the fantasy rankings perspective.
Yeah, it's great. I mean, that would mean Aaron Sanchez, based on averages, is going to have an ERA over 4 this year. Like Kyle Hendricks having a 2.80 ERA makes total sense. That would be the average increase. But Aaron Sanchez would be at 4.08, and
yeah, I think
scary.
That you can't just apply the average, obviously. But if you were asking me, I would guess that Hendricks is probably more likely to see it increase by a full run.
Yeah.
And Sanchez is probably going to see an increase by half a run.
Yeah, I mean, you look at, if you go on Fangraphs and you can sort by FIP minus ERA. And I think he had the third highest in baseball. And he still had like the third best FIP as well. But there's a lot of regression. There's a lot of room for regression for Kyle Hendricks.
Yeah. Okay. And I should probably walk back what I said, taking a guy from top 20 to top 80. I mean, if it was 3 going to 4, maybe that's true, but 2 going to 3, no. I mean, obviously, a guy with a 3 ERA is going to be much higher than the top 80 pitcher.
I would still take the over on Hendricks there.
Yeah, I think Hendricks is probably 3.25.
I'd go a little higher even.
Wow.
I think he's someone with a lot of bust potential. I think any pitcher who he kind of relies a lot on, he relies a lot on called strikes. He relies a lot on kind of guile and
it's Dallas Keuchel inducing soft contact.
Sure.
And
yeah.
That's not, as the math nerds like to say, that's not very sticky.
Sure.
Is it a little reminiscent of Zach Greinke?
Yes, very much so, actually. And Zach Greinke had like his worst case scenario last season. It's actually kind of interesting. He had his best case scenario and his worst case scenario right next to each other.
He's going to be a regression candidate 2 years in a row just for going the exact opposite direction.
Well, I'll be the guy who likes Kyle Hendricks since somebody needs to kind of balance this out here. I mean, if you're anticipating a rise by as much as a full run, I still think he's a top 20 pitcher. And that's factoring in a lot of regression. His peripherals have been very consistent throughout his career.
Right.
And I think he's due for another jump in innings this year. So that'll kind of help balance out the ERA rise.
My thing with any kind of low strikeout pitcher, and he's more of like an average strikeout pitcher, but
yeah, eight per nine,
Greinke last year or Keuchel last year, is that just like if things start to go a little wrong for them, they can go very wrong. I think we actually kind of saw, Greinke and Keuchel are probably the best examples of that.
They're extremes. I wouldn't expect him to have as bad of a year as they did when they came back
to
Earth.
But it's entirely possible.
I'm trying to look at an estimate for where he would be next year. And I think of like a Jose Quintana.
Yeah, that seems like a very good
Julio Teheran
comparison. Yeah,
right in that Julio Teheran, Jose Quintana range.
Pitching for the Cubs, I would expect him to. Who had the most wins between those two?
Quintana had 13. 13. He could have. Yeah. 15. I'd say 15 would be over under.
Okay, I might even take the over in that scenario, provided he's also going from 190 innings to 200 or 210, like I think is possible.
All right, let's move on. Talk about the news and notes really quickly here. The Yankees signed Chris Carter to a 1 year, $3 million deal, and the Rangers signed Mike Napoli to a 1 year, $8.5 million deal. Kind of interesting. Carter was the number 16 first baseman in points, number 14 in Roto. Napoli was the number 14 first baseman in points, number 11 in Roto. And to sum it up, they're both, low batting average, high strikeouts. They draw a fair amount of walks, but they hit home runs. 41 for Carter, 34 for Napoli.
All of your infield sleepers are ruined.
Why? Because of these platoons?
Oh, Greg Bird's not going to play as much.
I think probably. That was always going to be the case. It's just now instead of Tyler Austin, it's going to be Chris Carter.
Well, I feel like because Chris Carter is the reigning NL home run champ, there's going to be more of an effort to get Carter in the lineup than there was Austin. So now it's going to be every left-hander Bird sits for. And potentially also Matt Holliday sits. And potentially also Aaron Judge sits. Now Aaron Judge has an easier, it'll be easier to justify sending him to the minors when he's hitting 150 on April 30th.
Which he will be.
So, and it hurts Carter himself because obviously, they're going to try and get him in the lineup more, but it's not going to be an everyday job. So I think all four of those players drop out of the mixed league consideration.
And
Carter, Judge, Holliday, who is the other?
I'm still considering Holliday in the last round. I'm not sure I don't feel like this affects him as much as Scott does.
Yeah, because Matt Holliday was going to get time off anyway. You know, Matt Holliday's not going to play seven games a week. Anyway, I would say in Texas, obviously, Joey Gallo. I think there's a very good chance that he does not get an opportunity for an everyday role. We were talking about this in the office yesterday, trying to figure out whether he or Jerks and Profar is more likely to see time at DH, and I think it's kind of both/neither. I don't think either one of them is going to get enough opportunities.
It's Evan Grant is the writer. He was tweeting about this last night and had some thoughts that I was not really expecting.
Okay.
What were they?
He was talking about how he thought this might mean a little bit more time at DH for Beltre.
Okay.
He was talking about Ryan Rua playing pretty much regularly against lefties. He was talking about Shin Soo Chu being moved to DH. And I think he has a pretty good grip on things that are going on there. I'm trying to find the exact article for exactly what he said, but the thing that I noticed the most was in the entire article that he wrote about what does this mean for playing time.
How little Joey Gallo and Jerickson Profar were talked about?
Joey Gallo's name was not in the article.
Okay.
Yeah. So
why is Mike Napoli not just the starting first base? Is he not the starting first baseman for the?
I think he probably is, but I think that there was a thought that before this, first base might be a platoon between Profar and Rua, or just mostly Profar.
I'm going to make a bold prediction. You ready?
Let's hear it.
Joey Gallo is never even a semi-regular player for the Rangers.
They just don't seem motivated.
That's not that bold.
Okay. They don't seem motivated at all to make room for him. He's hit 240 in the minors each of the last 2 years. I'm not saying he'll never be a semi-regular player for anybody, but
he's looking more Russell Branyan than Giancarlo Stanton over the last couple of seasons at AAA.
Yeah.
And he said that they pressed Bannister for details, and Bannister just said there would be a lot of rotating at first base, DH, and left field, which is bad for everybody. In the piece, Grant actually had guessed at 450 plate appearances, I think, for Napoli.
What is that? Is that a Coke can I hear in the background?
No.
Yes.
Yeah, no. That was definitely a Diet Coke can. Absolutely. Yep. All right, so let's just finish this up. Is Mike Napoli, again, number 11 in Roto last year, number 14 in points at first base, is he someone that we should draft in mixed leagues?
Oh, yeah. No, definitely. He might be my favorite late round source of homers now, especially since Carter can't be. But Napoli, I mean, he's been at his best when he's played in Texas. His two previous stints in there, his percentages are much better than anywhere else. And, coming off a year where he set a career high in home runs and RBI, he is 35, but I think, you know, if you're really just counting on it for home runs, I think he'll deliver those.
Okay. Mike Napoli got drafted in the 17th round in our head-to-head categories, 12-team head-to-head categories mock draft yesterday.
17? Mm-hmm. Okay, not earlier than I thought. I was actually about to go for him there as my third bench hitter when I still had pitcher spots to fill because, hey, clearly a standout in home runs.
All right, Homer Bailey, out 4 to 6 weeks. Not going to throw for 4 to 6 weeks after arthroscopic elbow surgery to remove bone spurs. A couple of notes from Yahoo that are kind of fun. First of all, baseball is planning to test a rule in the low levels of the minor leagues in which a team would start with a runner on second base in extra innings. So that's quite
awful.
Gimmicky. Yeah, quite gimmicky.
Awful.
Terrible.
They do that in like competitive little league. I think they call it Texas rules or California rules or something. It's awful rules. And no.
I agree. And
like, who has ever said, man, this extra inning game, I wish they could just do something to arbitrarily end it.
I mean, yeah. It is kind of awesome in college football when they do this. I think they should go further, position players pitching in a home run derby style. Whoever gets the most home runs with 10 outs gets the win.
Okay.
I'm with Heath here. Extra inning baseball is the most interesting baseball. So why are you like it? That's not the way to shorten the game.
I'm going to save the age thing for tomorrow, but I'm just going to tell you now that I think you get some of you on this podcast are ageists, and I think it's unfair.
Thank you.
And I'm going to give you a trivia question right now. Oh, if you look at 3-year averages, which we have on our stats page and our leagues on CBSSports.com. Mike Trout is the number one outfielder over the last 3 years. Who's number two?
In which format?
Any four. Oh, actually, I didn't check points, but I'll check. I'm going to guess either format.
Over the last 3 years?
Yes, Roto.
Nelson Cruz.
Nelson Cruz is correct. Well done.
Yeah.
Yeah, Nelson Cruz becoming one of the more consistent players in baseball over the last 4 seasons, really, is kind of one of the more shocking results we've seen in a long time.
Nelson Cruz.
He's gonna bust this year.
Outfield finish for Nelson Cruz in the last 3 years. 7th, 6th, and 5th. 3 straight 40 homer seasons. Age is but a number, fellas. But anyway, Brian Wilson looking to resurrect his career as a knuckleballer, according to Yahoo.
He's so wacky.
That would be so Brian Wilson. So let's talk about the head-to-head categories mock draft. I don't think it makes sense to go through it pick by pick, really. I want to talk more about the differences in format. The top 12 were basically the same, except, and actually, now I apologize for not doing this off the air. Very unprofessional of me. But Scott, do we know how to pronounce? Is it lawyer?
Laura Michaels. I think Laura. That's how you pronounce it. I'm not confident. I've seen his name written much more than spoken. But a legend, yes. in the fantasy industry, one of the longest
fantasy, longest going fantasy baseball writers. I believe he was in the book Fantasyland too, featured there, known as the Zen Master. Yeah, he was part of this draft.
I prefer to think of it like you're saying rawr, only you start with an L. Rawr.
L-A-W-R. So follow him on Twitter, L-A-W-R Michaels. Fantasy baseball Zen Master, former MLB.com statistician, two-time AL Tout Wars champ. Lore plays bass in thebiletones.com, so you can check out his band. He actually looks like one of the coolest guys on earth, and I would like to meet him. But his team is totally wacky. So let's look at his strategy and see if you can win. Cause sometimes people just pick like certain categories to win, every single week and make that the basis of their squad. And Lore had the 12th pick out of 12, so he had 12 and 13. And Kershaw was off the board. He went Bumgarner and Sale. So surprising that he didn't take Scherzer. Maybe it's the off-season surgery. I don't know. Or injury. Is it? No, did Scherzer have surgery?
I don't think so. Okay. I think it's just a stress fracture.
Yeah, okay. So maybe it's the off-season injury. So Bumgarner and Sale with picks 12 and 13. Cespedes and Cueto with his next two picks at the end of round three and beginning of round four. So now he has Cueto, Bumgarner, Sale, and Cespedes. And Lore's team ended up being, the hitters just aren't going to really measure up. But Real Muto and Vogt at catcher, and you only need one. So we never draft number two catchers, but this guy knows what he's doing. So Real Muto and Vogt, Belt, Kipnis, Michael Franco, and Nick Castellanos as a backup. Brad Miller and Brandon Crawford at shortstop. Cespedes, Piscotty, Chris Davis with a K. Grichuk and Cole Calhoun for three outfield and one utility spot, probably. Five outfielders there. Cespedes, Piscotty, Chris Davis with a K, Grichuk, Calhoun. And the pitching staff, Bumgarner, Sale, Cueto, Archer, Robbie Ray, AJ Ramos, Brad Miller, and Betances.
Andrew Miller.
Thank you.
He also has Brad.
He does. He's both of those.
He's not going to
really
use Brad.
Really cornered the market on Miller's.
So, I don't know. His pitching staff is going to be, his starting pitchers are going to be the best. So maybe he can win ERA. And with Miller, Betances, and Ramos, even though Ramos had a high whip last year, he'll probably win whip most weeks. I don't think he's going to win saves because he only has one closer.
Right. And that was actually his third reliever drafted, I think. I think he drafted Miller and Betances both ahead of
See him doing exceptionally well in four out of the five pitching categories.
Yes, right, except for saves. And he might win saves. All it takes is one injury, and he might have, you know, five out of five categories most weeks.
I think I would have really liked to, I love different strategies.
Yeah.
And trying to find different ways to win.
Well, I just think it makes sense to do something different when everyone else is doing one thing, because you're going to get value on the guys that you're doing that with.
If he would have just taken Billy Hamilton, I think I really would have liked it. Like, guarantee yourself one offensive category.
That's a great point.
Well, I don't know that Billy Hamilton alone would guarantee him steals, because he basically punted on steals apart from that. He punted on steals.
Yeah.
He more or less punted on saves, unless you're banking on an injury for Cody Allen or whatever.
Probably punted on batting average.
Okay, I mean, that's going to be kind of variable from week to week, but... Yeah, and then it gets to what Chris and I were saying earlier, the variable nature of ERA and WHIP. Yes, he does have the best pitching staff, but he is not going to win ERA and WHIP every week.
One thing you notice with a head-to-head categories format is that one bad start can absolutely tank your week in ERA, and that's what's difficult about relying so heavily on pitchers. Is like there's going to be a time where Madison Bumgarner gives up seven runs in an inning and two-thirds. It happens to everyone. And if you get two of those in 1 week, you're pretty much sunk with this strategy.
Yeah, well, for that
week,
that's
what I'd worry about. I mean, this format I've already indicated isn't really my comfort zone, and Lore Michaels is, you know, without question an expert, so I don't want to be, you know, too hard on this approach, but it doesn't make sense for me.
Yeah, and the thing is, I think people overthink it a little bit with categories leagues. And the one categories leagues strategy that we see a lot is load up on relievers and win saves, ERA, and whip, every week.
Right.
Forget about wins. Sometimes you win wins, maybe randomly. Forget about strikeouts. But you load up on middle relievers and closers, and you win the saves, ERA, and whip. You get three of the two categories. But the value in that is that those relievers are drafted later, and you can use your first eight picks on hitters, if not more. Yeah. I've never seen somebody do this with starting pitchers that they're drafting early. Three of his first four picks were starting pitchers. So this was different. That's, you know, it's just, it was different. I thought we pointed out. So other things that, that we noticed here. I noticed that Heath and I picked sixth and eighth. And I think Heath's team is like 10 times better than mine. So.
Thank you.
Well, I know what the difference is. I always say I want one, top 10 pitcher. I have two. And I did it because it was a mock. I wanted to see how my team would turn out. I was thrilled to get Scherzer as the fourth starting pitcher off the board and, 17th overall.
Yeah, you kind of stumbled into really good value in your first two picks, and I kind of hate you for it.
So I had Scherzer.
It's like through no, you know, work on your part.
Oh, Paul Goldschmidt. Yeah, Goldschmidt 8 and Scherzer. Yeah, I like my team, but I actually think Heath's team is my favorite. I have Goldschmidt and Scherzer. And then I'm sitting there in Nelson Cruz I took in the Ageless Wonder in round 3. And sitting there in round 4, and Dozier is on the board, and that's who Heath took two picks later. And I was thinking about him, but then I said, like, well, what if I take two aces or two top 10 pitchers? I never really do that, but I took Lester. So I don't know. Like what's your pitching staff? I know it's DeGrom and Salazar, and my top two are, Scherzer and Lester.
You're ahead of me there.
I know, but I really like DeGrom. DeGrom could be the best pitcher. DeGrom could win the Cy Young this year. It wouldn't surprise me.
Right. It's weird. My hitters are all old, and my pitchers are all young. So my pitching staff is DeGrom, Salazar, Rodon, Gray, Nola, Snell, De Leon, and Pineda.
Okay, so yeah, let's compare the pitching staffs, and I want you guys to tell me if you think mine is considerably better than Heath's, which it should be, since I took two before he took his first. So mine is Scherzer, Lester, Keuchel, Fulmer, Happ, Stroman, Eduardo Rodriguez, and Cobb. Scherzer, Lester, Keuchel, Fulmer, Happ, Eduardo Rodriguez, Stroman, and Cobb. I like it.
The thing is, I would like yours a lot more if this was a points league. Like, you've probably got me licked in innings, but I don't really need any innings.
All right, so yours again is DeGrom, Salazar, Rodon, Nola, John Gray, Pineda, Snell, and Jose De Leon. Actually, I think mine is like a lot better than yours now.
Yours is definitively better, Adam.
Yeah.
But I think the point Heath was just making, and it's been brought up a few times already, is it so important to have a better pitching staff in this particular format?
Pitching's so volatile. Having a high variance pitching staff, especially in a format that kind of rewards variability, I think makes more sense.
I think I'm close enough to you in pitching that the difference in who wins the pitching categories between us might come down to who has the most two-star pitchers that week.
I don't know. All right. We don't have to just break down our teams. Anything? What else do you want to talk about with this format? So, let me focus. I guess the taking two ace starting pitchers. You know, the rest of my team is Gattis, Goldschmidt, Kinsler, Bregman, Dansby Swanson. I was the last person to take a shortstop. Cruz, Ian Desmond, Brantley, and then I have Fowler, Beltran, and Jake Lamb. Also have Zach Britton and Addison Reed. I like the team. What do you think about taking two aces? I got them in the second and the fourth round. Is that something you guys would do? Would you recommend it to our listeners?
I would have preferred if you had drafted Heath's 3 through 7 starting pitchers.
Which would be...
Not those specific guys, but guys in that more high variance range, because you've got the two rocks in Lester and Scherzer. Those are two guys who I think they've both thrown 200 innings in each of the last four seasons. They're about as dependable as a starting pitcher can get. Go wild after that. You know, you've invested big. I would say wait a little longer.
But Dallas Keuchel, you don't consider Dallas Keuchel to be in that class?
I do. I think of the one of the three who do. And I know you got Keuchel and Happ both at a discount. It's
I got
not like
Keuchel
really
in the
10th.
Yeah, I got him in the 10th round. That's the thing. I didn't take. I went second, fourth round, and then I didn't take another pitcher until the 10th round, and it was Dallas Keuchel.
You got Keuchel in the 10th and Happ in the 13th, and I was gearing up to take both when you took them just because I thought the value was so good.
I don't think Happ will be. I think that's going to be really close to Happ's average draft position, if not a little bit earlier than when he gets drafted.
Well, he went after Jose Urias. He went after Kevin Gausman. He went after Vince Velasquez. That seems
just like
called
out like half my pitching staff.
Yeah,
I think that's totally fair for half.
I'm not saying it's bad. I just don't think it's.
I think
it's about where
I think
be
it's
drafted.
Good relative to those. I have him significantly ahead of those in my ranking,
and I have him below all those.
It's not always about upside, you know. It's not always about strikeout potential. Sometimes the guy that just is more proven
but Happ's not. That I guess that's the thing is that Happ's not that much more. Proven. Like, I know I was defending him about a week ago, but, you know, when we talk about proven, yes, he's more proven than Julio Urias, but he's got about two more really good months than Vince Velasquez in his career.
But Vince Velasquez wasn't really that good last year, is the thing.
Oh, in the first half of the season, he definitely was.
Happ was in Cy Young contention. Vince Velasquez had a 450 ERA.
But for the first half of the season, Vince Velasquez was great.
It was largely built
on that one start against the Padres.
I was so annoyed.
He had a 332 ERA.
I was so annoyed owning him. The guy would pitch five innings every time out.
I was just looking to see if I was way off in what I said about where Happ's going to be drafted. His ADP is 160 overall. His average rank is 183 overall.
Where's his average rank among starting pitchers?
In the 50s? No. 47.
It doesn't just say the number next to it?
47.
Oh, okay.
Right between Urias and Velasquez.
Okay.
Well, I got both Urias and Velasquez in this draft. I did want to point out one thing that I noticed in this draft. And that is that the third round is where all the risk is. Yeah. In this specific draft, and I think overall, like, everybody wants to take safe guys with their first two picks. And then in the third round, you had Freddie Freeman go with the first pick, who I think is relatively risky.
In the third round?
Yeah.
Yes, I agree.
Noah Syndergaard, who had elbow inflammation last season, Ryan Braun, AJ Pollock, Jake Arrieta, Starling Marte safe, but then Giancarlo Stanton, Nelson Cruz, J.D. Martinez and Yu Darvish are about as safe as you can get. And then Robinson Cano and Yoenis Cespedes. I think there's a ton. I think that's actually really interesting.
Darvish isn't safe.
Sure, coming back from Tommy John, but, you know.
But there's a lot of upside.
That's exactly it. It's a bunch of guys who could be first-round values.
Right. If things play out like we want them to, they'll go from third round to second round probably next year.
And I thought that was interesting to note that everyone kind of plays it safe. I mean, obviously the guys in the first 24 picks are huge upside guys as well. But the third round is finally where everyone's like, all right, let's do it. Let's take some chances.
I don't feel good about that. I don't really feel good about it. That's why we were talking about Braun in our last show. I don't feel great about him in the third round. I'd feel amazing about Braun in the fourth
Braun
round.
Braun at 27 overall is too early.
But I don't really consider Nelson Cruz risky. Yeah, that's why I wanted to bring
He's
up
37.
The age. I don't care.
Like, I understand the track record is fine, but
last year he was 36.
He has a long history of injuries.
He plays DH. He DH'd over 100 games last year. I mean, like when are if you start just because a guy is old, you start downgrading them, you're going to miss out on so much talent. Almost four.
You're going to miss out on a lot of players going off the edge too.
But if you bet against guys who are aging, you will eventually be. There's 100% success rate in the long run.
Oh, that is a silly thing to say.
Like, we are all going to die someday, Adam. I'm sorry to break this to you.
That is a silly thing to say, though.
If you bet against older players,
then you would have missed out.
Eventually, you will be correct.
You would have missed. Oh, great. So, how long before you were right about David Ortiz? Never.
Probably like 3 years from now.
Yeah, exactly. How many times are you missing out on Nelson Cruz because he's old? It's just.
Maybe this year.
I can bridge the divide here. I mean, you're like,
I'm not saying you should avoid
age is a risk factor for Cruz,
yeah,
but it may be the only risk factor. And relative to some of these other players, I think it's pretty mild.
Right.
One.
Ryan Braun has a lot. Like, Ryan Braun has like three different risk factors that you have to take into account: injury history, age, regression possibilities. Jake Arrieta has.
He could fail another test.
Jake Arrieta has multiple risks. Giancarlo Stanton. That's the thing, is that Nelson Cruz is about as safe as a 37-year-old can get, but he's still a 37-year-old, and the history of 37-year-olds in baseball is not particularly strong.
14 of the top 30 hitters last year in points leagues, probably pretty similar in Roto. 14 of the top 30 were over 30 or 30 or older.
Sure.
So,
really?
Yep.
14 of the top 30 hitters?
Yep, but the year before was only, I think, 9.
That's, you know why that's surprising to me?
Mm-hmm. Why?
Because 11 of the projected 12 first rounders are under 30.
I think only two of the top 10 were over 30 or 30 or older. And then after
Donaldson's the only one of the
first rounders.
Of the first rounders, and then in the second round you do have Cabrera, Votto,
well,
and
okay.
Concepcion.
Yeah, the over 30 is a little bit of a stretch.
No, 30 or older.
Okay, 30 or older, and one of them turned 30 in July
and
last year.
And 30 is a totally arbitrary mark.
30 is much different than 36.
Okay, but
gone from 30 to 36.
But 31 is arbitrary. 32 is arbitrary. There's no age where it's obvious that they fall off.
This is all probability.
It's a sliding scale.
I just think that.
But I would guess it's kind of a. It compounds. Like, each year, the risk gets greater.
Yes, factual.
The thing for me is that the designated hitter is the great equalizer. And I think it keeps people young. It euthanizes them.
It certainly did with David Ortiz. It certainly didn't with Alex Rodriguez.
No, Alex Rodriguez had that crazy good
year.
That
one year.
Yeah.
The 1 year.
Right.
He was really old.
He was 2 years older than Nelson Cruz currently.
Well, the 2 years matters at that age.
I can also say 36 to 38 also a big difference.
I mean, the DH, like.
Especially for top flight athletes. Yes.
If nothing else, DH keeps him healthy because, I mean, if you remember, if you've been playing fantasy for 5 years or more, you remember Nelson Cruz was notorious injury risk guy, and that's gone away in his late 30s. Probably because he's been playing DH a lot more.
Yeah.
All right, well. We had the age discussion after all. Back to this draft. I took some more notes on this draft here. Outfield approach. So this is a 3-outfielder league. You know, for the 5-outfielder league draft, Scott and I talked about the, I don't know, high-low, early-late, stud and dud approach. Was it a little bit different for you, Scott, in this draft? How did you approach outfield? Because, you know, first of all, it's only a 3-outfielder draft, but every team except for 2 drafted 4 or more outfielders, so they're probably going to be about 50 outfielders drafted. Anyway, what was your outfield approach?
I wasn't very deliberate with my outfield approach, and it, you know, I was more interested in handling other things, as I've talked about, just getting what seemed like hitters who could carry me in certain categories. And my first 2 picks with that in mind ended up being Bryce Harper, who I mean, you know, that was just kind of, I was picking 11th overall. Bryce Harper's the right guy to take then.
That's
the
default.
Then my second pick was Charlie Blackmon, which was kind of more along the lines of, I want somebody who is going to carry me in multiple categories. So I prioritized him over Corey Seager, who I technically have ranked higher. So in the process, I ended up filling 2 of my 3 outfield spots then and there with my first 2 picks. It wasn't intentional, but since it turned out that way, I didn't really have to focus on outfield, and I didn't feel like it was a mistake blocking my 2 outfield spots that early. There wasn't a point in the draft where I was like, oh, I wish I could take another outfielder here.
Right.
So that kind of maybe justifies what I was saying earlier about going high-low in the outfield.
You didn't take another one until round 9, so.
Yeah.
That's the key. I mean, you're not going to take your 3rd one around 4 or anything. Anybody else have outfield thoughts?
That was actually, I didn't love the fact that 3 of my first 7 picks were outfielders. I took Mookie Betts in the 1st, AJ Pollock in the 3rd, and Christian Yelich in the 7th. But I'm really happy that I have that group of outfielders. That's three guys who all might hit 300 with 20 homers and 20 plus steals.
Yeah, not bad. Okay.
But, you know, I'm not sure it was the best usage of my available assets either. It was just Yelich had been sitting out there for like three rounds as my top ranked player, and I finally just had to pull the trigger.
Late round hitters, Heath, I noticed. I don't know that they're better than the late round pitchers, but they're more proven. You know, like Jake Lamb, Logan Forsythe, Yasiel Puig. I don't know if you would call them proven. Look,
yeah.
These are late round
pitchers. Where are you going with this?
Well, these are late round, but the pitchers, almost all of the pitchers taken in the last three or four rounds, you're just kind of hoping.
Yeah. Well, I think that's because there's, and we talked about this after, I think, our first points league draft, and I talked about the safety that there is there at the end of the draft as far as hitters go. And I'm okay with taking one or two of those safe hitters. When I'm taking a late pitcher, there's some safe pitchers that are going to give you league average numbers that we just don't even draft.
Yeah.
And because we'd rather take the young guys, and we'll end up those safe pitchers turn into streamers that we only start when they're facing the Braves or have two starts.
The Braves. I don't know about the Braves this year, but
Phillies.
Phillies.
Okay.
They're going to be better.
Yeah.
They're coming. The Phillies are coming.
By the way, why Junior Guerra was, there were two or three picks where the guy in front of me took who I wanted and I got really mad. One was Gregory Polanco, and then late in the draft, round 20, Junior Guerra went, and I just, nobody is talking about Junior Guerra, but he was awesome in the second half.
Oh, we want to give somebody credit for sniping. Phil Panebczyk sniped me over and over and over again. And I was like convinced at one point that he was just using my rankings. And I'm sure he wasn't. He has his own rankings. But yeah, he took Votto from me in the second round. He took, not Verlander. I didn't want him. He sucks. He took Chris Davis from me in the sixth round. It was not a pleasant experience drafting right behind him.
All right,
I like that we can mention some of these other experts who
took Ken Giles from me in the 12th round.
Just makes us sound better.
Kind enough to participate in this draft with us, giving up their time freely to help CBS with its content. And that's nice of Phil Panebczyk, Lorne Michaels, Lance Brozdowski, another one. He runs a site, big3sports.com.
Yeah.
And a writer named Malamoni. That's what he goes by. He goes by like a
nom de plume.
Yeah, a nom de plume for Razzball. He was also in this. Oh, and Stan Sun, also from Razzball. Okay, so we got them all mentioned in there. Thanks, guys, for helping.
The whole Razzball family.
Yeah, Stan Sun. Stan Sun took a lot of my players, pissed me off, but so don't invite him back. But let's finish with this. Shallowish format that we had with this head-to-head categories, but you know, points league rosters. It's tough to say. Do you really focus on the categories and balancing the categories, or do you just try to get the best players and not overthink it? I do think that you can overthink it in this format a little bit, and people obsess over categories, I think sometimes a little bit too much. What do you guys think?
I think it really depends on your approach to pitcher. With your approach of taking the two pitchers in the first four rounds, I think you probably had to focus just a little bit more on categories. With Lars' approach, I think he probably later with hitters needed to focus on trying to find a couple categories that he could win, because he was going to win on basically all the pitching categories.
Or at least that's what he's counting on.
With my approach of just basically almost filling out my entire lineup after I took two starters, I just tried to put together a lineup of exceptional hitters and figured that the categories will mostly figure themselves out. And I think they will.
Yeah. Okay. Guys, Heath, Chris, or Chris, sorry, Chris, Scott, he's already spoken.
Crot.
What? Are you okay, Adam?
I said the wrong name. Sorry.
All right, so can you restate the question? I got kind of lost in Heath's answer there. Not that it was a bad answer.
Well,
it was probably great.
Thank you.
I think that sometimes in these head-to-head categories leagues, people go a little category crazy and maybe sacrifice better players, or maybe just assume that they can guess the categories better than they actually can. So do you, when you're constructing your lineup, should you focus on winning categories when you draft, or should you just focus on getting the best players and putting the best team together?
I mean, it's
finding the right balance between the two, I think, because you're right. I mean, Billy Hamilton, great for steals, but so few lineup spots to make up for his deficiencies that is he really somebody you want. But at the same time, if you get too many vanilla players, you're not going to be winning anything. So you need to find the right balance between the two. I think maybe I went a little too best player available in that league I referred to last year that turned out so horribly for me. And it was just a struggle to win any offensive categories because they were all just pretty good at all of them. And they weren't all just pretty good at all of them. I should take that back. Some ended up being, you know, lower end in some of them. But it's easier to kind of work in those middling hitters if you have standouts in categories early. Maybe that's closer to what I was trying to do in this draft, is just make sure that my early round hitters, which are obviously going to be high end, just considered good hitters overall, but make sure they're the kind of high end hitters who really excel at things.
Okay.
And then I don't have to worry so much about the filling in the gaps with the later hitters.
All right, but can I just comment on your team last year?
Sure.
So, Heath, was that a 16-team league or a 14-team league?
14-team league, and, like, it was the best drafting experience I've ever had in fantasy baseball.
Okay, well, it was a 14-team league, and it was an OBP league. And, mm-hmm. Scott, I think your first two picks were McCutchen and Votto, or Votto and McCutchen.
Yes. Yes, they were.
And, like, they were huge busts. And
right.
A lot of Votto's production came in the fantasy playoffs, which I'm not, you know, which you didn't make, so you didn't get it.
Right.
And
right.
I think that 14 team league, not a lot on the waiver wire to make up for two early round busts. So I don't want you to overreact from that experience. I just think if those two guys had played well for you in the first half, you might have been fine.
I might have, but I also think McCutchen was just the wrong pick for this format. I mean, he's not a great home run hitter. He's certainly not a base stealer anymore. Pretty good OBP. I mean, really good OBP guy, but that's one of those variable categories that are hard to rely on.
Did we know all this last year, though?
Yeah. I mean, I was expecting a 25 homer, 10 steal season.
Okay.
From McCutchen. And that's just wasn't a good use of a first round pick at this format. I passed up Jose Altuve for him, which in retrospect would have been a much better pick. Obviously, that's knowing Jose Altuve had an MVP caliber season, but I think it was just the wrong approach to begin with. And so I'm.
But also, because you prioritized on base percentage too much.
Yes.
Which is, yes. So also
which is
sort
why
of
the
point.
Focus was more home runs and stolen bases this year, because that's one of those variable categories from week to week. The percentage categories are less reliable.
Okay. Chris, final thoughts on this subject?
Draft the best player is always good advice after the fact. It's just it's awfully hard to actually follow that. You have to have a strategy and be flexible and understand the way your draft is going. If you see a run of pitchers, that might be a good sign that there will be, you know, better hitters available a little later on. You know, that kind of stuff. It's always. And I think in this specific draft, I think all three of us, Scott, Heath, and I, all kind of prioritized those later pitchers. And that makes it more difficult if you notice that that's happening.
All righty. We've got emails to read tomorrow. And that's fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. I know Chris wants to talk about advanced stats. We will definitely talk about that tomorrow. No, we're going to do it. And I want to talk about players that we haven't spoken enough about to this point because we are doing our position previews starting next week. So
I'll bring a list of Royals.
We have barely spoken about Rougned Odor. I feel like we never talk about Rougned Odor. He will be discussed.
We haven't mentioned the name Victor Martinez yet.
Victor Martinez is one of Chris's utilities, right? You drafted him?
Yeah.
Yesterday. So we will talk about Victor Martinez and.
I haven't heard anybody say Lorenzo Cain or Alex Gordon.
No, we thought that's, well, Gordon maybe, but we talked about Cain because Scott drafted Cain in a recent draft. So, yeah, no, it'll mostly be guys like, Didi Gregorius, Jacoby Ellsbury,
Mike Moustakas.
Yeah. All right. That's it for Ruby Heath Scott.
Can we please talk about Martin Prado?
Yeah, let's do that. We'll talk about Dan Straley. and Scott's a Braves fan. See you tomorrow.